Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today I'm joined by Adam Fair, Zoe Burnett and Christina Taylor. Adam, Zoe and Christina are mental health campaigners who all have a range of mental health illness and neurodiversity lived experience. Adam, Zoe and Christina join me today to discuss the importance of community and the support it can provide in recovery. Hello!
Hey.
Good morning, everyone.
I was going to say everyone's name instead, and I was just like, I think at 10 o'clock in the morning, I don't know if I have the capacity to do that.
On a Sunday as well, of all days. Oh,
I know. Dragged everyone out of bed on a Sunday. And it's like the cold, I don't know about you guys, but it's -5 where I am.
Not that bad here. There's still snow on the ground now. So.
Snow?
Yeah.
You all need to move down south.
Well, it's snow that's compacted these lives.
This is an ongoing campaign. But
it's that sort of snow that's just compacted and it's now ice, so you can't walk anywhere or drive anywhere. Yeah, a bit slippy.
Yeah, but that's not the one. We had that actually before Christmas in Cambridge. We had snow and then it was so cold that it just stayed for like a week, but it turned into ice as well. And that, like, I think it was like 5 days after it had snowed, I needed to use my car because being in Cambridge, I don't use my car. And oh my God, scraping it off. It was absolutely awful. Yeah. It was just like ice, like stuck on my car. So I was just there with a spatula, like trying to scrape it off because I had no tool for getting it off.
My car park's on a hill as well. So I tried to get up to my car one night when it was really ice before the grit of the car park. And I got about halfway up and just slid back down again. It's quite fun actually, but yeah. End up just going down on my backside, just sliding down.
Nice. Nice. Thank you all so much for joining me. I'm really excited to chat to you. It's so nice to have so many people. I've never done one with four people, so that's really cool. And just kind of to, I guess, explain why we're doing this. So this podcast episode is for 3 years of Full of Beans, which is, I think it's 3 years.
Incredible.
Oh my God, I just lied.
We'll go with three.
Yes, three.
Say three, yeah.
Is it two?
Sounds good.
We're going to go three.
I actually can't remember
three of
now.
Us, it makes
we're going to go three. Who cares? No, it's two because it's like 100 and something episodes. Okay, I'm not going to redo that because it's kind of funny. The second year of the themes. To celebrate that. So yeah, it's I thought that it would be lovely. Well, you guys actually reached out to me to do an episode about friendship and community, which I thought was a great idea. And for an anniversary episode, I thought that would be a great thing to do, to speak about kind of, you know, the community that can be, that can come from maybe something that's not so great. So I guess to start with, how do one of you want to explain kind of how your friendship developed? How you guys got to know each other?
It's all a bit weird for me. Like, I kind of met Adam and Zoe individually. I think I was on Twitter and somebody said something really horrible to me about how I looked, and Adam like sent me a DM, and we'd just been sort of speaking in the same eating disorder circles, and he was just like, that person's really horrible, and he stood up for me, and I think we just sort of started chatting from then. But Zoe, I always remember Zoe, because she just had her baby, and she didn't know many mums, and I said, oh, if you want to talk to me, you know, just about stuff, because I've got two kids, then, you know, drop me a message any time. And the first time she dropped me a message, I'd literally just come round from anaesthesia. she's going, I think we should do stuff working about eating disorders. And I was like, okay, yeah, sounds great. Yeah, and then... seemed to work. And then I think we realised that we'd been speaking to one another separately, and it just made more sense to all speak together. So we made a little DM group, and we just talk every day. Like best friends now. Don't know how you two met. That's how I met them.
Yeah, sorry about that, Christine. I certainly picked my timing there, didn't I? I had my daughter during the pandemic. Very lonely time, very isolating. But Christina was just a bit of a rock, really, bless her heart. Adam, it just kind of happened by accident. It really did, but it's been such a blessing. It really has. We just kept seeing each other tweeting, and then obviously pops up for one doing little DMs. I think it was, I kind of reached out to you one day after I saw something that suggested you were struggling a wee bit. And then we just got chatting, and straight away this bond kind of connected. And as Christina said, we realised we were all talking to each other, so we just put it all in one place instead. And it has been the most wonderful thing that's ever come out of Twitter, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the best part of it was, is it was just completely natural. It just happened. And yeah. it literally just happened over time as well, and wasn't like forced or anything. And we got to know each other because we just got on really well. Like immediately we just clicked, and sort of, you know, I think our brains work in similar ways as well in terms of how we, you know, support each other and act and think and stuff like that. So it's just been, yeah, it's been really, really nice, and sort of showing the best of what social media can do, sort of connecting people from over the country, you know, but who become amazing friends, you know.
And we're all, you know, we're all different stages in our lives as well. So it's just, you know, and we're not people who would ever have kind of met outside of social media or eating disorders, because we all live in different places. And it's just, yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. I think it's really nice as well, like from what all three of you have just said there, that the reason kind of, it just shows how caring of people you are, because the reason you initially reached out was, you know, somebody was maybe having a bad day or struggling a bit, and you wanted to provide that support, which I think is so nice as a development of a friendship, but also kind of speaks to me about the community on a whole. It is a very supportive place. Like I know recently, you know, when I've put things out, people have then got in contact, and that's so lovely to know that you're not like, you know, putting things out there into a space that people aren't hearing you or like giving you negative comments back. So I suppose in terms of like recovery, why do you think like that sort of community and that sort of those sorts of friendships are so important? I guess not just in recovery as well, because it's kind of like an ongoing thing, isn't it? Once you have recovered as well.
Yeah, I think having a peer, just having some people who get it and people who understand, sort of not understand what you're going through, because no one can understand exactly what someone else is going through, but someone, you just got people there who you know you can just offload to and will just, you know, listen and support. But then I guess the good thing about us is we sort of, the way we talk is, if one person needs support, we'll give it, but if more than one person needs support at the same time, we all just give it to each other at the same time as well. So it's like, we can it's really nice in that way, in terms of having that just mutually supportive group who just, you know, want to just be there for each other and, you know, try and you know, wade through the rubbish that is life sometimes, I guess, even outside of recovery and all that sort of thing. You know, there's ups and downs and things that people go through that are horrible sometimes, and you know, it's just about being there for each other, I guess, which is, you know, like a family, I guess, in a way. So
yeah, we sort of run in peaks and troughs together, the three of us, don't we? Like, we always have, like, we're always coming like, oh no, I've had the worst day ever, and then you're like, oh, me too. Or You know, like these two are like secret agents. You know, when I was looking for jobs and I was having a really tough time at work because I couldn't get made permanent, and I found one now, which is amazing. And I got this little package through the post, and they'd sent me like a bracelet just reminding me they were thinking of me and stuff. And they'd done it because I was stressing about something coming through the post, and I'd taken a picture of it, and one of them had like zoomed in and found my address and managed to like, and they sent me this thing, and they just knew that I was having a terrible time, and I was just like, oh my god. But they're detectives, you go watch.
That makes it sound a little bit
I wasn't expecting it. It was it's usually me that does the detective work. So don't...
Yeah, you are a super detective.
But always do stuff like that for each other, you know. If one of us is struggling, the other two will probably be like, well, maybe we should, you know, do something, or hype them up, and sort of we do it together, and we just want to be each other's cheerleaders and be celebrating what each other's doing. And if one of us gets a promotion or some good news, like I've just moved, I've just got promoted, I've just got a new job, and we've just been like so excited for each other. There's never any competition in the kind of advocacy work we're doing. We just want to support each other and do as much as we can to help each other.
I think peer support on a whole, it's so lovely to have someone to kind of walk beside you, almost not following in your footsteps or in front or anything, just those non-judgmental people by your side, just giving you those little words of wisdom when you need it, knowing that you're falling before you even realize yourself sometimes, and just providing that non-judgmental, empathic, beautiful words of wisdom. I generally can't imagine my life now without that peer support.
I think it's really nice what you said as well, Christina, about that like non-competitive nature in terms of like the stuff that you're doing. And because I mean that's something that I wanted to ask you guys later, and maybe we'll come on to it now or in a bit or whatever, but I think sometimes in the eating disorder space it can be quite a competitive environment, so it's really nice that you guys can, you know, be there to support each other and be there to support each other with, you know, life things as well. I think that's really great about it as well, is that it's not just like focusing on one specific thing. It's you've gone from sort of being in that eating sort of community and developing friends to now being, you know, like you said, like best friends, like lifelong friends that support each other through everything, which that's what a friendship is. It's not just kind of like an isolated thing. It's an overall like celebrating the wins, you know, commiserating maybe the things that don't go so right and being there to support each other.
Very much just leaning on that. I think all of us in the past year or two have had our diversity screenings and whatnot done. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that eating disorder. We've all then been through that together as well, which is, again, has been a godsend, because it's a bit of a minefield out there to get diagnosed with these sort of things and to get that help and support. So again, just pulling on each other's strengths and helping each other out with that as well.
When we're all in a room, we're like, your neurodiverse maybe aren't, oh yeah, because when we talk we're like all the same, and everyone realizes, oh yeah, that's what ADHD sounds like.
We all talk over each other sometimes as well, that's part of it. No, I think just going on what you said about the competitive nature and stuff, it's it's really amazing that, you know, we all say that there's enough room for everyone's voice in the community and in peer support and stuff as well, and it's about, you know, bringing everyone up, not saying, you know, why have you got more than me? Why have you got more followers? Why have you got a bigger voice or whatever than that, like that? It's about, you know, we all have our own strengths and we all have our own amazing qualities, and it's about, you know, supporting each other through that. And, you know, it's not about being competitive. And I think sometimes, especially in the eating disorder community, as you said, Hannah, it's about, a lot of the time, there's a couple of big voices who take a lot of the sort of exposure sometimes. And I think often it can drown out people who actually deserve that voice as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that the community as a whole needs to work on as well, in my opinion anyway, is that we need to help empower everyone's voices to ensure it's a more diverse and sort of inclusive community. Because I know they're buzzwords that are used too often, but it's really important here that we get voices that are underrepresented within the communities speaking up, because without that, we can't get real progress.
Mm. How do you think we sort of make like headway towards that? Because I think I agree with you that there are like particular voices that kind of, you know, are louder. And almost in a way, sometimes it feels like they're the more socially accepted voices, if that makes sense. Like, or maybe, yeah, I guess socially accepted, but also like the voices that you'd expect. Like, you know, we have so many stigmas about eating disorders, and I think often the people that are heard are the people that we expect to have an eating disorder. And obviously, you know, you want to shift that to be maybe people you don't expect to be the ones to be heard. But I think it's quite difficult to actually put that into practice from what I've seen.
Yeah.
This is where, again, kind of peer support can have that helpful element, I guess.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
I would, again, I'm just going to use myself an example. Atypical anorexia, larger body. It was terrifying to begin with to start speaking out about these things. But again, people like Adam, like Christina, just helped me along that journey. To just knowing that actually, if you are wanting to share your journey, you know, get in touch with someone and we can help guide you through that. We can be there to support you, just give you room to vent, because it can be blooming exhausting. It absolutely can be so exhausting sharing a journey. So, yeah, just having that support from everybody.
Yeah, and I think all of us have shared our particular journeys on social media and received various different stigma-based responses, and we're always ready for that with each other, and so, you know, we'll chat to each other and I've got an article coming out, I'm a bit anxious about it, and, you know, and we're always there to make sure that if some, you know, behind the scenes, and like Adam is always putting himself in the firing line to defend me and throw me on comments and things, and he's, oh, bless you, you always do, don't you, and you always end up getting horrible comments back. But the reality of talking about an eating disorder, unfortunately, in 2023, is that even those socially acceptable voices, you will get comments like, there are children starving in Africa. There are, you know, first world problems. Honestly, why don't you just eat a sandwich? And it's like, those, when you've gone through the emotional labour of telling a story, having that said and knowing that people out there think that your life and your struggle and the things that you've been through are worth less than other people's, it really, you know, it does really get you, especially when you're talking, you know, you've got talking to three neurodiverse people who suffer more intensely with rejection and feelings than perhaps people who are neurotypical. You know, that is a really difficult thing. And that might be that the voices who are the loudest, they're hardened to that. They're used to hearing that so much that they're more willing to put themselves on the line. But we should really encourage, and I think one of the worst things I see in eating disorder advocacy is the comments that come from the lesser known ones, like binge eating disorder. You know, I get a few comments that are unpleasant, but when you see a story about something like binge eating disorder, it's just disgusting. And all three of us will go and have arguments with people till we're blue in the face. But it shouldn't be that way for people when they tell people about something so personal, private and painful to them.
Getting some more spotlight, should we say, at the minute, is in particular ARFID, avoidant restricted food intake disorder. Very much the amount of comments I've read that's like, oh, it's just picky eating, for God's sake, it's just picky eating, and it just makes my skin crawl. So frustrating. But again, if somebody's sharing that story, just get support behind you when you're doing advocacy work, because it can be a little bit brutal at times, shall we say.
Yeah, and I think it's about everyone within the community helping by just supporting those people as well. You know, even if it's just a like, yeah, a little, whatever it might be, just to make sure they feel supported, because like you said, it's, if you're just starting out on that journey of sharing, one negative comment could put you off completely. And it's about just trying to drown out those negatives with sort of love and support, I guess, is sort of what you can. It's not ideal, and there's always going to be ignorant people who don't get it, don't understand it, don't want to understand it, and just do it to be nasty, to be completely honest with you. But we've got to, I think, collectively work to call them out and try and support the people who are, you know, experiencing that sort of abuse, because that's what it is. I know we've all experienced it in some way, shape, or form, and it's horrible when you go through it. We shouldn't have to be hardened to it, and we shouldn't have to put up with it. But unfortunately, we do. And that's where the supportive side comes in, I guess.
We always do. If we hear that somebody's asking, if we get a request for something, someone's asking for something, and it's something that we don't know something about, it's really important to us to like elevate the voices of people who really are suffering and struggling with these things. Because if something comes through to one of us to speak about binge eating disorder, we're like, okay, who's the best person to speak to? Because it's not for
absolutely
us to be speaking on that kind of issue. It's not right for us, you know, and we really respect that as a group, and it is really important to us that the right voices are heard when it comes down to something. Because what can I tell you about binge eating disorder? What can I tell you about eating disorders in the Black community? I can tell you what I've read, but I can't tell you how it feels. Mm-hmm. And it's really about how someone feels.
I think that's so important in terms of actually then getting like the right knowledge across. Because I think, you know, I've already said this, but eating disorders are such a stigmatized issue, that as soon as, you know, then if somebody that's maybe, I mean, obviously it's great to advocate for stuff, but if somebody's like sharing when it's not their lived experience, I think, like you said, there are so many voices that could share that lived experience and get, you know, that real, authentic kind of emotion across about it, or just like the factual experience of how it feels. To do that kind of as not somebody that's got that lived experience almost feels like, well, okay, well, you know, you could have shared that voice rather than maybe what you've read, which I think that feels really important, to kind of, you know, reach out to other people and share that. And also I think if somebody came to me and was like, oh, you know, yeah, I know you've got experience with this, and would you like to share your experience? I think I'd feel really validated from that, in terms of like, you know, other people are wanting my story to be shared, so that kind of, you know, the truth is going out there rather than maybe the stigmas.
I'm just completely echoing what you said.
Yeah, same. I think when, you know, when I get requests from, if I ever get requests from people I meet, you know, I'll always say, I don't want to be the only voice on this. Because it's important that other people have their voice as well. And, you know, there's no one monopoly. There's no one voice that can represent the whole community. I can represent my lived experience, and that's it. Christina can represent hers, or we can represent hers. We can talk about what we've read and sort of things that we maybe understand in a theoretical perspective, but there's nothing that will replace that lived experience.
Which, to be fair, in itself is, again, talking about the eating disorder community on the whole, it's so lovely that there is so many different people willing to speak up, because we can learn from them as well. You know, we don't know everything. Of course we don't. So, yeah. Again, by elevating those other voices, it gives us a chance to listen to where, because obviously I do work within eating disorders as well, it helps me as a professional, where could we be going wrong? What could we be doing better?
Equally, it helps me professionally, because I work in diversity, equity and inclusion. So my job is literally to look at intersectionality of protected characteristics within organisations. So when I'm looking at when voices are represented, if I'm speaking to these diverse ranges of people, I'm hearing these different perspectives, and I'm thinking, when I do an event at work, am I making sure that this particular part of our community that often says that they're ignored is speaking? If not, it's kind of my job to make sure that those people feel more comfortable in an organization.
Yeah. I saw a quote the other day on Instagram. I don't remember who put it on, and it was like, I recover loudly so that other people don't struggle in silence. Was it you? I thought it was somebody that I didn't know.
It's quite a well-known quote, to be fair.
Right, okay. Anyway, I flipping loved it because I think a lot of the time I don't get backlash from sharing about, you know, my journey and stuff online, but I think people are often skeptical in terms of like, why are you doing that? Like, is it actually positive for you? And I totally get it. And I think, you know, there are things that sometimes you don't share and there are things that you do. And, you know, I think I've tried and give a balance so that it's not just like through rose tinted glasses. But I think that is, you know, kind of why all of us do it, is so that, you know, if you're somebody else is struggling with something and they don't have anyone else to turn to, you know, we've all got each other, we've got family and friends support. But if you don't have any of that, I think this community is so important for kind of just being able to talk about things that you're going through. You know, recently with my relapse, as much as my family and friends have tried to understand, like, Hannah, why are you doing this? But I found it so, you know, amazing to have you guys to reach out to and, you know, just to have that support and that understanding of, you know, how much an eating disorder holds over you, because I don't really have anybody in my life that can understand that, because it is such a complex thing. And, you know, maybe even the people in the community can't understand it. They're never going to know exactly what's going on in your head. But I think just to have that extra level of empathy of, you know, having been there and being able to understand just has been so sort of validating, but not in the way of like, oh, I'm validating your eating disorder, in the way of like, it's actually like, okay. And Adam sent me a text the other day, like, stop beating yourself up and like, don't be angry at yourself, because I was just getting so pet up, like, why the hell have I come back here? And I think to hear somebody else that's, you know, had that experience say, you know, stop being so horrible to yourself, is like, okay, you've actually been there, rather than somebody that's not experienced it saying, oh, stop, you know, stop being, it comes from the same place, but it kind of, you can relate to it so much more when it's from somebody that understands.
You know, my husband, he's obviously, we've been together for like nearly 16 years, and he can empathize when if I'm having a tough day, but I know that these guys can understand why I'm crying over a piece of broccoli. And he's like, mm-hmm. looking at me like I've grown an extra head. And I've always said that eating disorders are like another language. Whenever I've met somebody in person who I don't know has an eating disorder, I can tell just from their mannerisms, the way that they act around food, the things that they say, and the way that they're trying to conceal it. And it's just, it's like spending a lot of your time in a country where you don't really understand the language, and then meeting a few people who are, you can just go away and speak and you all understand and you all know, and it doesn't matter how ridiculous what it is you're saying, they get it. Even though their experience is different, they just understand why the most irrational thing in the world is totally rational to you.
I think I found that a lot recently, in that kind of the things that I'm experiencing or feeling it's very difficult for people that don't have an eating disorder to understand. And I guess just on that topic, this might be controversial, but I think it's important to ask, and this is not what I think of you guys, I'm just asking how you don't maybe slip into this. I think in the past I have definitely, this like when I was younger and on Tumblr and stuff, so it was not a healthy environment, you can sit in a circle of an eating disorder and all kind of, it might be that you feel like you're working towards recovery, but all your conversations about eating disorders, you know, all of your friends now have an eating disorder or have been in eating disorder recovery. And something that I'm finding through my therapy at the moment that's kind of coming up so much is my identity for the past 14 years has been that I've had an eating disorder, and that's going to take some massive shifts. And so I guess, you know, people could be skeptical of saying like, well, if all your friends have an eating disorder or eating disorder recovered, how are you going to have a life outside of that?
Yeah.
So I guess, like, what would you say?
I think that's valid. It's a valid, you know, thing to say. I think surrounding yourself with not just people with an eating disorder, but people who are in recovery, recovered, whatever you want to say, is also really important because it gives you that other perspective. But also, I think a good thing about what we do within the community, or what we try to do, you know, especially what I try to do, and I'm not speaking for everyone, but Zoe and Christine, you do it a lot as well, is we don't just talk about eating disorders. We don't just talk about the sort of nitty gritty and the sort of issues. We try and talk about other things, and, you know, finding your identity beyond that eating disorder, beyond that sort of little bubble, is really important. I think that's something that, you know, I try to do, especially to say that, you know, everyone's version of themselves is about finding your identity outside of that. And, you know, like you said, Hannah, it's really hard to try and find that when you're within a bubble, but I think it is possible if you surround yourself with different voices and different viewpoints who are all sort of, but also looking at not just following other people with eating disorders, but also looking at professionals and, you know, people who like that as well, to sort of understand things a bit better, you know. And it's not directly related to eating disorders, but I would never have got an autism and ADHD diagnosis if it wasn't for Twitter. So without that, I wouldn't understand.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Why some of the thoughts I have, why I am who I am. I would have always tried to be put in that sort of square peg into a round hole, when actually now I can look at trying to make the, you know, the peg square as well as the hole. The sort, you know what I mean? It's about making them, it's about trying to understand yourself better. And I think that's really helped with that. So I think in a way, yes, peer support can be sort of a race to the bottom if it's not done the right way and if it's within, especially in some circles on Twitter, which I'm not part of, and I don't think anyone else on here is part of, which are very negative and very sort of harmful. But I think if you put yourself into the sort of more positive communities who talk openly about their struggles, which is really important, but do it in a way that sort of gives others understanding and more insight into themselves, I think that can be really positive at the same time.
Yeah, I always say with regards to like the whole identity thing, I will always say that, yes, my eating disorder was whatever, part of me, but it's not just who I am. I'm still a friend, a mum, a wife, a counsellor, all of those other things. And if you do stumble across my Twitter page, it's not, yes, I will post stuff as a professional about working within the eating disorder field, again, trying to retweet stuff that I see. But I'll also be talking about the fact my two-year-old is just... What is this? It's not just, you know, it's not just my identity. And again, one of the things, even though us three in particular came together within the eating disorder community, they get pictures of all sorts. You know, again, it's not just eating disorders that we talk about. It is just life stuff as well.
Yeah, when I started working in diversity and inclusion, I mainly focused on my eating disorder because it was underrepresented. You know, I used to work for a big insurance firm, and you know, financial services, they just saw food and drink and that kind of thing, and I was just like, no one ever understands. And I started writing a blog there, and I worked with one of the in-house doctors because they sold health insurance, and so he used to read it, and he said to me, like, I think that your eating disorder is, you know, like part of your identity, and you will need, if you want to get better, you need to like differentiate yourself from being someone who has an eating disorder. And it was a really good piece of advice because I, you know, really wholeheartedly threw myself into eating disorder advocacy for the prior 3 or 4 years, and everything I was doing was talking about helping people and making people better, but I wasn't actually thinking about who I was as a person. And after that, I did sort of step back and reflect and just think, yeah, actually, you know, I am a lot of other things as well. And it really broadened what I was looking at and what I was talking about. And over that time, the focus is barely on eating disorders for me anymore. You know, I mean, I talk about it because somebody has to. And eating, people who've been pregnant with eating disorders, we are a rare breed and people don't talk about it very often, although there's emergingly more of them. But when I was pregnant, I felt like the only person, and I was really, really worried that if I told people that people would take my baby away from me and things like that. So I am that voice for people when, like, that it, you know, they don't feel like they, you know, that anyone else understands. But when I talk to these guys, we don't really talk about eating disorder symptoms at all. Like you were saying, we have such a weird conversation going on. We'll talk about stuff, trends that are happening in the eating disorder community. And, oh, what do you think of this? This is a really interesting campaign. This is really cool. What do you think of this? But, like, it's mainly talking about you putting your life in boxes, Adam, and what your daughter's doing, Zoe, and the absolute hell that is an nearly 11-year-old. And an 8-year-old that I've got, and I'm just really trying to prep Zoe for the future at the moment.
Appreciate it. But then yeah, we do rarely talk about eating disorders, but then when things do wobble, shall we say, we can lean on each other in those sort of times as well.
You know, we know that Adam was going through a really tough time with exercise, and but that both Zoe and I sometimes use exercise just as a fun thing that we do, and we were very mindful at that time of being respectful about sharing that part of our lives because we didn't want to make that more difficult for Adam. So, you know, and now we're all in a place where it's a bit easier for us to go, oh, I'm just nipping back from a HIIT class or something. But it's about being sensitive in the way you do it. And I think there's a huge danger in some circles that it's like, oh, I've lost this much weight this week. And then that triggers the next person. And they're like, oh, well, if they're losing weight, that means they're more ill than me. That means they're more deserving of love and care. Because that's what that eating disorder is telling you. And we know we never.
Totally right. I think it's amazing how you two have been so mindful of me, and hopefully we're all mindful of each other when, you know, when we need to be and when we struggle. But we can lean on that experience that we've had to sort of help each other at the same time. I think something you say, Christina, and it sort of brought me back, is we've talked often about how advocacy is brilliant, but advocacy shouldn't be your life. You know, if it's in terms of it can often cloud people actually looking into themselves and trying to find themselves and their recovery, and that what their version of recovery is. You know, I know that there's a lot of people who, you know, go head first into advocacy, become eating disorder therapists, whatever it may be, but they do so to almost avoid thinking about themselves, and avoid actually doing the work that they need to do to try and find what their version of sort of recovery or management or whatever it is. And I think it's about that can be a dangerous place to be in at the same time. So, you know, I think as a wider community, it's about sort of, yes, supporting each other, but also understanding when people need to take a step back and say, actually, you know, I need to focus on myself for a bit right now, because that's the most important thing. Because without you being okay, and without, you know, advocacy will still be there. It will always be there, because eating disorders awareness is about 50 million years away from being half decent in terms of within wider society. So it's true, especially when you see the comments on things. So I think it's about, The message, I guess, I'm trying to get across in a really bad way is focus on yourself first, because that's always going to be the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that I have massively come to realise over the past few months, is that it's so easy to kind of, I guess, mask everything with the, like, oh, I'm doing all of this to help everybody else, and just completely forget about yourself. And I think my experience definitely was that I went to work in eating disorders because I hadn't fully navigated my own eating disorder, and it was a way of keeping the eating disorder alive, but not in the form of an eating disorder, like a physical one. And I think that I've seen that quite a lot in people, and it's a difficult thing to say to somebody, like, you know, are you actually doing this because it's helping you, or are you doing this because it's helping everybody else? And that's a way of you sort of not helping yourself. And that's really hard to come to terms with. But also I wanted to pick up on what you were saying about like the friendship that you've developed. I think it's brilliant that you do just talk about like random life thing, because that's what friends do, isn't it? It's all, like I said earlier, it's every different element. And I think that kind of shows the stage that you're in yourself in terms of, you know, where you're at with your own things, because you are able to sort of have conversations about other things rather than just eating disorders. I think when you have communities of people that are in the depth of an eating disorder and then they become friends, that's when it's really competitive, and maybe all you're talking about is eating disorders and kind of the behaviors that you're doing, and it's a very triggering space. And you know, I know that this isn't the case all the time, but like I found if I have met somebody that's, you know, actively engaging in an eating disorder, and I am as well, then maybe it's not the right time to be friends. But I did have a friend who, when we were 14, we were both struggling, and we were just like, for now, maybe we shouldn't be friends. And we've reconnected now. And unfortunately, we're both now in relapse. But because we've got that history of being like, it didn't work last time, kind of talking about things, we just don't talk about anything that's going on. We just talk about life outside. And I think that's the most important thing, like you were saying, Christina, with kind of, you know, knowing what was right, what's right to say sometimes and what's not. It's having those boundaries in place. But I think when you're in the depth of an eating disorder, those boundaries can be really difficult if you've not got that understanding, because you almost, in a weird way, don't want to be triggered, but by being triggered, it makes the eating disorder louder. So therefore the eating disorder has more of a hold.
Yeah.
I was in inpatient treatment I'm older than these guys, much as it pains me to say. So I was in inpatient treatment back in 2006, and I developed a really intense and strong bond with somebody there, and we came out and we carried on being friends, and I could see these little signs that she was slipping back. I kept mine a lot more private that I was slipping back. Mine happened a little bit later, but I knew, you know, you could see, like, she was getting certain foods out, and you could see that the things that she was doing were getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and the parameters around what she ate and what she did were getting smaller. And it was so hard, because I felt so powerless to stop it, and I knew what was coming. I could see it coming a mile away, and I couldn't say to her at that time, because I was so ill myself, I just couldn't say, you know, because I was so frightened that, you know how an eating disorder is, it becomes you, it becomes somebody else inside you, and if someone threatens taking away your coping mechanism, you are like, just get out of my life, I don't want you anywhere near me. So I just stood there and watched, and she ended up back in hospital, and I ended up relapsing as well. But that person now, she has two kids, and we are friends on Facebook, we don't speak very often, but honestly, every time I see little snippets of her life and that she's left all that behind, I feel like as happy as seeing a member of my family, because it's just so brilliant to see that she's happy and that she's stable, because I never thought I would see her like that, and it's just wonderful to see. And I think if we had continued our friendship, we probably, you know, we did used to go out from the eating disorder clinic and we'd be like, oh, have you used laxatives too? Oh yeah, me too, yeah, and, you know, and stuff like that. And it was probably quite a toxic friendship for the two of us at that time. But now it's just full support. This is so brilliant. I'm so pleased for you. And I think her daughter's a similar age to Zoe's. And so, you know, occasionally I'll be like, yeah, just wait till she's 11. But yeah, it's got to be the right time. And I think for us as friends, we're not in the same place necessarily. And we have our wobbles and we have all of our different things. But we kind of know what, you know, like whether something's true. We'll always ask. We'll always say, this happened to me today, but I don't want to trigger either of you, you know, and we're very respectful about that with people. And we know what the right things to say and the ways to offer support are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, when I was obviously I do kind of class myself as fully recovered, but when I was actively engaged in those behaviours, I'll be honest, I would seek out those friendships to purposely screw up my own recovery. I'll throw it out there, I'll be honest, of course, because I it was something that the eating sort of kind of drove me to do. I'd seek out other people, if that makes sense, so I could kind of develop those friends, so I could copy them in a kind of way. I'll be honest, and I'm shameful to admit, of course, I was drawn to like the pro-anorexia sort of communities, because that was something that, yeah, my eating sort of little brain lit up for. Obviously, with these guys, it is completely different, because like Christina said, we're all kind of working towards, well, fully recovered, working towards recovery, wherever we're at. So it's a lot more safer, should we say, to engage in this sort of friendship.
Yeah, I think, firstly, it's not shameful at all. It's an illness, and that's part of it. It's totally part of it. I think that's one thing I've got, one problem I've got with lots of support groups, though, especially ones that aren't very well moderated, is, and this is more, and so I know this is more on the professional side rather than the friendship side, but a lot of the support groups can be, I've only been on a couple, and I went on them more just to understand what they were like, and they are very toxic environments a lot of the time, race to the bottom, everyone just, and that's not because the people on it shouldn't be talking about what they're talking about, it's just not the right place for them to be talking about it with other people who are also very unwell, because all they're doing is essentially, there's nothing in there that's actually going to support someone, it's just everyone saying about how hard things are, which is absolutely valid for them to say. But is that I don't think that's the right environment. I think that's where the boundaries in terms of friendships come in as well. It's about, you know, understanding when, you know, when's the right time to actually talk to people. And, you know, if someone else is struggling, is that going to be harmful for them to talk about that too? I think, but to flip that, I think one positive about sort of a friendship, especially like ours is we can probably notice the other.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Chumba. Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Other people, the other person struggling, sometimes even before they know themselves, because the signs that we see that, you know, maybe sort of subconscious to sort of how we're doing, but we can sort of help it, you know, go actually, yeah, just let's, you know, support that, or let's take a step back from talking about that, because actually that's not the right thing to do right now. And I think, you know, it's almost having mutual boundaries that you sort of, it's sort of almost an unspoken rule, I guess, about supporting each other, but also noticing, you know, especially when people are more recovery focused, about noticing, you know, is that potentially them slipping back? Could that be triggering? Could that put them in a place where we don't want them to be? So let's set that boundary and not sort of go there, I guess.
Yeah. I think sometimes I have maybe a controversial view of this. I don't know. But so I did a support group, a DBT skills one, and it was absolutely brilliant. And we had boundaries. In the sense that we, like, you know, laid down boundaries at the start, but actually, and I think also one important thing here was we were all there to recover. Like even if it was like 0.00001%, you had something inside of you that wanted to recover. I think the kind of support groups, Adam, that you're referring to, I think are very much people have no inclination of wanting to recover whatsoever. And there, that's when it's really not great and you need to have those boundaries in place. But one thing that I found from the support group was, so the guy that ran it, he said, because I said at the start, I was like, I don't want to say something in case I trigger somebody, and he was like, it's actually really important that you do just say how you're feeling, because if you do trigger somebody, we then know that that's an issue that they need to work on.
Yeah.
And for me, I actually found that like a really, it was a really interesting thing that he said, because now if someone triggers me like in day-to-day life, rather than getting angry and being like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that, it's like, okay, that's, maybe it's not a normal thing to say, but like in life, you've just said it, so people are going to say it. So I now need to work through that in my own time. So that for me was, that was really important. But we did have boundaries, you know, in the sense of other things. I can't think specifically what they were, but the whole triggering thing that really kind of reshaped my mind on like how those sort of things go. And that's how I've been with friends as well, is like when I've told people, you know, that I've been struggling or whatever, they've been like, oh, you know, let me know like how you want me to be in conversations, or like, you know, like I went to a friend's yesterday and he was like, do I just treat you like a normal person? Like, yes, just treat me how you would treat Hannah, because I am Hannah still. And if something that you do makes me feel uncomfortable, that's a, it's almost a motivation to me to be like, shit, I can't manage this. I need to get better because I want to be able to do this normal thing that my friend is doing for me.
I'm going to have to do it. I'm so, so sorry, forgive me, but I never switch off from work, clearly. Obviously, support groups, when they're very well modulated, when they've got very, very good, first steps. moderating those groups, yeah, it can be a wonderful kind of, again, a place to kind of develop those peer friendships. I actually met one of my closest friends, who's Rosie's godmother, in like a support group. Sarah, bless her heart, and again, we're still good friends to this day. We'll go out for meals together. She's in a very different stage to recovery than what I am, but she was just saying, you know what, I'm thinking this right now, and I can be like, oh, you mate, let's have a chat about it. And knowing that that's okay, it's safe to do that with me, so to speak. Yeah, support groups can be beautiful when moderated right, and when done properly, shall we say.
Yeah, it's the moderation, isn't it? And I think, you know, I think it's also about understanding, if you're in this friendship group, it's about understanding each individual. So I've always said that nothing anyone says will ever trigger me, because the only person that triggers me is me. So people can talk about whatever they want and it doesn't bother me, because that's not how my brain works. That's not how my eating disorder works. Another person might be totally different, but I think it's about understanding that. Like you said, Hannah, it's about, you know, treat Hannah like Hannah, because for you, anything that potentially triggers you is a reason to go, actually, I need to work on that, and I need to understand that better.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, anything that anyone says, I just go, it's not got to do anything to do with me. Whereas someone else might hear something triggering and go, oh, I've got to do that now. So it's about understanding those different sort of traits of the person that you're talking to at the same time. And if you're within a friendship group, those boundaries can be set by just understanding the other person as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I find it really interesting, actually, because only think certain things certain people do. I have there's like five people in my life, and they're the ones when they say things that will like affect me. But that I know is what I need to deal with. It's not what they need to deal with. But I think also the kind of, you know, the development of friendships from shared experience is so rewarding and comforting, because like you said, just knowing that people kind of understand what you've been through, and then the friendship does blossom into something that you didn't maybe think that it could be, but you can connect on a different level. So just to finish us off, I wanted to ask you guys what you think the best thing that you've learnt from each other is. Maybe you could do like, I don't know, one from each or whatever, put you on the spot.
I'll go first, love it. Why not? I'll be kind and I'll let you guys have a think. It literally just popped up into my head right away. I've always worn masks. I've always tried to fit in with different people. I'm one of these people who've got different masks for different situations. I'm like, oh, which one do I put on for which? Because no diversity, it's . But with these guys, I've learned, actually, I can take all of them off. I can be my authentic, true self without fear of judgment, without fear of anything. And I cannot tell you how nice that feels and how calm that has made me over the past few years. So the thing I've learned the most is that it's okay to be my true self. It's okay to be me. And I've taken that with me in everyday life. And that has had a knock-on effect in my job, the people around me. I'm not trying to fit in with everyone anymore because of the confidence that these guys have actually given me. So thank you.
Lovely.
Yeah, you know, like all three of us, since we've been friends, we've like totally kind of changed our lives in one way or another. And I think, it is in part down to sort of just having that sounding board with each other. Like, I completely changed my career 18 months ago, and I don't think that I would have had the confidence to just go, you know what? And I changed it once, decided to do one thing, and then realised that was a really dumb idea and that I should go into work in what I do work in. And, you know, these guys have been, like, always really supportive of that. But, you know, sort of different things from both of you. Like, the way Adam is just, he just will take anyone on. Yes. And he is just, like, totally willing to stand up for anybody. And I got bullied when I was at school, and both of these two, like, these two have always stood up for me, and it just feels like a really safe, protected way. And, you know, I'm not really friends with them because I'm just going to stand behind them and they're going to look after me. It was that feeling of feeling protected by two people who genuinely cared about me and how I am. You know, that was a really important thing for me, but also just, it's rare to find people that you can just be so honest with. And a lot of my friends I've known since before I had an eating disorder, or while I masked my eating disorder. But these two people are friends with me in spite of my eating disorder, and they know everything about it. And we're just still mates, and we don't really talk about the illness part of me. We talk about the part of me that, you know, has all manner of weird things going on throughout the day and can talk themselves into weird shapes. That's a favorite one of our messaging groups. Sometimes I'll just do tricks because I'm hypermobile. but yeah, like, it's just that sort of being myself, like Zoe said, and knowing that you guys are there and you'll pick me up if something goes wrong, but you will be my biggest cheerleaders if something goes right. That was more than one thing, sorry.
No, clearly this friendship can't be put down to one thing, so that's amazing.
No, there's so many. I think one perfect example is the day me and Zoe actually met in person to go bungee jumping. It's the first day, and this is the honest truth. It's the first day I came back, and in the car on the way, in the car on the way back, my mum basically said, "That's the first time you've ever been yourself when you've been out with other people," because I was just me. And that is the sort of comfort that I got. And it's honestly, and it's the same with Christina. It'll be the same with Christina when we all meet. And, you know, it's just, we can just be who we are. And it doesn't only mean that, you know, you feel safer. It actually makes life more enjoyable as well when you do have those times, because you're not coming back absolutely knackered because you've pretended to be something you're not all day. You know, if I go on to message about something and moan about something or complain about something or try and support, you know, Christina and Zoe or whatever it is, it's because we're just being ourselves and we can just say what's in our minds and not worry about filtering it first. It's that sort of free. It's freeing. It's just completely freeing. And I think that's the nicest part of it for me, is just that sense of there's two people there who just get it and just understand and just allow me to be myself. And we just, you know, are there for each other and don't judge and don't sort of have any sort of preconceived ideas of what we should say, what we might want to say or anything like that. It's just complete and utter sort of acceptance. And I think that's the biggest part of it. And yeah, it's just amazing. And I feel so lucky, to be honest with you, for it.
Yeah, that's lovely.
It's the loveliest Sunday ever, isn't it? Oh.
Yeah, I think it's so nice when, like I said at the start, you know, something so lovely can develop from something maybe not so lovely. So that is really special. So just to finish off, obviously you guys do so much work, so I'm sure everybody will have already heard of you. But if they haven't already heard of you, where can they find you to hear more about the work that you're doing?
I'll go first again, sorry. obviously, I do work for First Steps. I'm just going to say it again, First Steps, Eating Disorder Charity. I work mainly with children and young people, so do, you know, go check out their website for help and support. But for me personally, I'm known as Barefoot Rebel. I'm not some sort of foot fetish person. It's because I am an extremely anxious person. So normally when I'm doing interviews, press stuff, I'm normally barefoot because it helps ground me. So I'm known as Barefoot Rebel online, Twitter and Instagram.
I'm an ambassador for Beat. So you can find me and ask me to come and speak for you through Beat. Or you can find me on Twitter, which is, now I made this sound more grown up because everyone makes fun of me for my my old name, which my husband made up for me. So it's CH Taylor, and then the two underscores. But on Instagram, I've got my husband's name that he made up for me, which is Barnacle Bear, which is a joke that's based, and mine is much less professional and funny, like, and cool sounding than Zoe's, is that my husband used to say I was like a little bear, and then when he hugged me, I was like a barnacle that clung on to him. So that's where that came from. And it's deeply embarrassing. So for Twitter and professional purposes, when I was booking jobs, I decided to change it. But for Instagram, which I have locked because I have pictures of my kids on my Instagram, then it's still Barnacle Bear.
And yeah, I'm just mainly on Twitter because I'd love to do more advocacy work outside, but at the moment just trying to manage time and stuff. But yeah, I'm on Twitter as AdamFair1996. Tweet mostly about completely random stuff and disability, but sometimes a bit of eating disorder as well. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Amazing. Cool. Well, thank you all so much. It's been so lovely to chat to you. And like you say, a great way to start a Sunday.
Thank you, Hannah. Bless you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay. You didn't start a business to spend your Sundays chasing invoices and manual data entry. But as you grow, accounts payable starts to feel like a full-time job you never applied for. Bills pile up, approvals get lost in email, and your vendors are constantly asking, "Where's my check?" It's distracting, it's stressful, and it's keeping you from the work that actually moves the needle. Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay is the exit ramp. QuickBooks Bill Pay automates the busy work that eats your calendar by bringing every bill, every vendor, and every payment into one organized dashboard. Stop chasing details and start seeing the big picture. Know exactly what's due, who needs to sign off, and how it impacts your cash flow before the money leaves your bank. Vendors can even manage their own details, so you stay in control of how and when you pay. Grow with confidence and put your AP on autopilot in QuickBooks. Learn more at quickbooks.com/billpay. Again, that's quickbooks.com/billpay. Terms apply. Money movement services are provided by Intuit Payments, Inc., licensed as a money transmitter by the New York State Department of Financial Services.